And now, it's time for the biggest bonanza in podcasting. With Dominic Stern and Nicholas Hodel, this is the College Basketball Bonanza.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into the College Basketball Bonanza on another Sunday night here inside the Bill Austin Radio Studio in downtown Phoenix. I am Nicholas Hodel. Dominic Stern, Dom Contini are both alongside me. And, you know, it's been a great semester here at ASU. And at least within this studio this semester, we're a great show to end things off here.
For sure.
It's been fun to build on the Bonanza brand. Coming into the studio, obviously Nick had started it back home in Indiana and then brought it here to Arizona State. I, of course, joined on the team last year. And now we're here in the studio, and now we've welcomed in Dom. So it's time to wrap up Semester 5 at ASU for Nick and I with this show, and wrap up semester 1 for...
Yeah, of course. There'll be plenty of content over winter break, but for this particular show, let's get straight into it with the Big Ten ACC Challenge. And the big upset, Ohio State over Duke, 71-66. I know Mr. Contini was really, really excited about this particular game, but for me, the biggest thing was Duke. Where were they over the last 4.5, 5.5 minutes, however long it was? Where were the Duke Blue Devils in their scoring?
They were cramping on the bench. Bankero was his, what was it, 7 pounds of sweat per game?
That's actually crazy.
Yeah.
That's madness.
It's a big body moving pretty fast and with a lot of movement out there.
Yeah, that was something else. But I know you were extremely excited about Ohio State and, you know, I guess really the big conversation with Ohio State was, where's the second offensive option? Mm-hmm. At least in this game, Sed Key.
Yeah.
20 points. What a game he had.
He was the option.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was he was definitely our go-to guy that game, and it's something I am excited to see coming from Zed. But, like, I think the story of this game is Zed and Zed. Cedric Russell, a transfer coming out of Louisiana, scored 12 points coming off the bench. And he's the kind of player that I was kind of surprised that didn't get a lot of notice coming to Ohio State, because he averaged 17 for the Raisin Cajuns last year at Louisiana. So I knew we were getting a scorer that would come into Ohio State. And, like, losing a guy like Dwayne Washington, Cedric was something that we really needed. And he was the spark off the bench in this game. So.
Yeah, and he was the reason why Ohio State won the bench battle 15-9 in this particular game. And here's the interesting thing. Of course, a lot of the stuff coming out of this game was that this was Ohio State's 10th win against an AP number one team. And since the 1949-50 season, they are 10-11 against AP number one. Here's the even more interesting thing. When you take away the four games in that span where Ohio State was ranked, they are 9-8 against the AP number one team as an unranked side.
Yeah.
That is actually madness.
We like to win in Columbus, so.
And it's also just, like, kind of crazy because you think, oh, 9-8, like, that's not that impressive. I mean, but that's against the best team in the country. They're 9-8 against the best team in the country.
While
an
being unranked,
team.
Too.
Yeah, while unranked.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And you know, that includes a four-game win streak with Thad from – that ranges from the late 70s to the early 90s, now two in a row in the current streak. That in the last game Ohio State had played against AP number one, that was back in 2018.
Yeah, against Michigan State.
Yeah, so it's like it's easy to forget when you have that big a distance between games between the number one team in the land. Mm-hmm. But Ohio State against number one is pretty scary.
Yeah.
I mean, that win percentage as an unranked side is no joke.
Mm-hmm. Ohio State is the Purdue of football and basketball. Like, they beat the top teams.
And you know what? Sometimes that's all you need, you know?
We just got to get into March eventually.
Dom, do you know how to spell Ohio?
O-H-I. Yeah, I had a lot of practice growing up.
Yeah, so does every other Ohio State fan. It's just funny.
The other big marquee game of this challenge was Michigan getting smattered in Chapel Hill, 72-51. And part of that was Hunter Dickinson not having a very good game, 4 points, 5 rebounds. That is not like Dickinson whatsoever. Caleb Love really stood out with 22 points. That's important because North Carolina is 5-0 now when Love scores 20 or more after this particular game. And so some of the notes and nuggets from this game on North Carolina's side. The win was North Carolina's first in the challenge since, guess what? Beating Michigan and Chapel Hill 4 years ago.
Wow.
The 21-point win, North Carolina's largest in the challenge since 2008. The 51 points Michigan put up, the fewest North Carolina allowed in the challenge since 2007. And perhaps from the free throw side of things, just some really interesting stuff. The two made free throws tie the fewest in a game in North Carolina history.
Yeah, 2 for 3, and then Michigan only attempted 6, and they went 6 of 6 from the free throw line.
And guess what? The 3 free throw offense attempts, the fewest in a game in North Carolina history.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So the big thing here is that, given what's happened with Michigan this season, is it time to push the panic button?
No. I would not say so either.
Here's why. Part of their problem had been their outside shooting. They'd been shooting under 30% from 3. They just hosted the Aztecs on Saturday. And San Diego State, one of the best defensive teams in the country. They close out on shots like mad, just very well coached on the defensive end. And they're able to make shots. They shot over 50% from 3 in that game. So I think that Michigan, they're getting really unlucky to start the season. Some of that luck kind of came back, and San Diego State almost got a little too lucky. And they're going to start making shots from the outside. Caleb Houston starting to make some shots. He went 2 of 4. From 3 in this game, also went 0-5 against UNC, shot a lot better against San Diego State. Once the shots start falling for Michigan, I think they're going to be a very good team.
Yeah, it does bring up some interesting things of this Michigan team. In certain games early on this year, just hasn't quite shown what many people thought they were. And I feel like it's not the first Big Ten team that's kind of shown some of that stuff.
I mean, I think it's just similar to what happened in March last year with the Big Ten. It's just failure to meet expectations. Like, I'm going to add another team in this conversation. It's Illinois. And Illinois and Michigan had a lot of hype coming into the season, for the most part being Michigan bringing back Hunter Dickinson and then Illinois bringing back Kofi Coburn. Those are two of the best players in college basketball. And the way they have performed thus far this season has been very disappointing.
So we're going to talk about a lot of the games from this challenge that perhaps swung the Big Ten's way or perhaps kept the ACC in it a little bit later on. But just to kind of like tease us a little bit into that, what's the one big thing that we've learned from the ACC, or the Big Ten rather, not just in this challenge, but also in the GABA games where the Big Ten surprisingly lost that to the Big East?
I think Illinois definitely isn't as good as we definitely thought. And Iowa, I mean, we learned more about Iowa from their play against Purdue later in the week. But Iowa definitely stood out, had been undefeated. They went on the road and won at Virginia to start the challenge. I thought that was very impressive of them. Not only did they beat Virginia, they put up 75 points against Virginia. That, of course, is something that is very interesting. Losing Luka Garza and then also losing, I forget his name from last year, but he was one of their best players. They did return Jordan Bohannon. They lost Joe Wieskamp. He was a very phenomenal player. They're just as good this year as they were last year. Maybe not like the elite competition, but Iowa's definitely a really good team, and you can't take them for granted.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot more about that Iowa-Virginia game and a lot of the other games where the Big Ten perhaps won this challenge and where the ACC stayed alive until the final game ended. That's coming up after a quick break here on the College Basketball Bonanza. Don't go away. And welcome back here to the College Basketball Bonanza right here on Blaze Radio. I'm Nicholas Hodel, Dom Contini, Dominic Stern. As we mentioned a little bit ago, there was a lot more games than simply Duke, Ohio State, North Carolina, Michigan. And Iowa and Virginia, as Dominic had mentioned earlier, the 75-74 win that was decided in the last few seconds of that game. And Iowa really made Virginia work in this one. Like, Virginia's defense just wasn't there, especially in the first half. The 44 first half points for Iowa, the most points Virginia's allowed in the first half at home in Tony Bennett's 13 years as head coach of the Cavaliers.
It's nuts.
Yeah. And there was a lot of that kind of stuff happening within this particular challenge. And it really kind of goes back to, you know, Virginia's defense, for some reason, just hasn't been as effective as previous years.
Yeah. What's crazy is, like, Iowa was missing their best scorer, and they still did what they did against Virginia. And, like, Virginia has just been so weird at the start of the season with what happened against Houston. And when is Tony Bennett? I don't know. I have no clue. Yeah.
Part of the reason is because less players are staying for 4 years now at the transfer portal. More players are coming into the program as well. So I think the roster turnover and the differences between teams in previous years is playing a big part of that.
And it affects Virginia probably a little bit more, because Tony Bennett's system is a system that you really have to learn. And you got to be at Virginia for a while in order to learn the system and really know how Coach Bennett wants you to play defense. And at least for some of these transfers, you know, it's going to take some time to really get into that. But Keegan Murray, I mean, I'm assuming the guy you referenced earlier, continuing, got someone that, you know, played a lot of minutes in this game, really was out for the Purdue game a lot, which I will talk about a little later on in this program. But to move on to another game within this challenge, the winner for the Big Ten Conference, Wisconsin 70, Georgia Tech 66. And Brad Davidson with 27 points really did Wisconsin and the entire Big Ten Conference a huge favor. But don't sleep on Michael DeVoe's 33 for Georgia Tech. He really kept them in this thing, because no other player scored double digits.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Wisconsin later but in the show. I think what Gray Guard and the Badgers have done this season has been great for the Big Ten, because they were really a team in the Big Ten that no one really thought of that was going to have a successful year. But with their championship run in Maui or Vegas. But like Jonathan Davis is a player that has carried with Brad Davidson. And Brad Davidson, I feel like, has been at Wisconsin for 20 years. But Jonathan Davis scored 25 points. I know this is later in the week against Marquette yesterday. But he scored 25 points against Marquette. And then 15 against Georgia Tech. I think the way Gray Guard and Wisconsin have always... like the brand of Wisconsin basketball is just, their depth is crazy, and they play team basketball, and it's just a beautiful thing.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those games that, I mean, both of these teams really fought. I mean, this was essentially for the challenge right here, either the ACC tie or the Big Ten outright win. But by the way, I did not see that coming at all. I thought for sure this would be the year that the Big Ten got the ninth win, the elusive ninth win that they just could not find in previous years. And here we are, just talking about a bunch of games that swung the ACC's way, because there was chaos in overtime almost everywhere you looked. Yeah. I mean, Nebraska and NC State, the quadruple overtime. Nebraska's second quadruple overtime game in program history. NC State's third.
Wow.
Just a really, really rare feat for both of these teams. I mean, shout out to ASU transfer Alonzo Verge for 25-10 in this game. Bryce McGowan's 24. Deron Seabrook, 39-18. What a line he had. Just, this is the kind of basketball.
17 of 20 from the line.
Yeah, whoo-wee. I mean, this is the kind of basketball that these conference challenges love to produce. And it's a terrific basketball game that, quite frankly, made that particular time slot a little more appealing. Perhaps I probably wish I was watching that game instead of 51-29 with the ASU-Washington State game that particular night.
Yeah, exactly.
But those are the kind of games that this challenge loves to produce, and perhaps one of the more high-profile examples of that, double overtime between Syracuse and Indiana.
Oh, the barn burner.
Yeah, 112-110 in favor of the Syracuse Orange, in which... big shout out to Buddy Boeheim. Played all 50 minutes, 10 of 23 from the floor, adding up to 27 points, 8 assists. And Syracuse is with a lot of these type of players, which, at least in the starting five, they got to go a long time. I mean, Jimmy Boeheim, 26 points, played 47. And Joseph Jerome III, 22 points, he played 44 minutes.
Yeah.
A lot of those type of guys on this Syracuse team. And perhaps the one thing that perhaps could come up throughout the course of the year of this Syracuse team is this going to really affect them over the course of time?
I don't know, because I think like Boeheim's teams are already coached well and trained well, and they play zone defense, so that's, I think, easier on the body.
Yeah.
But,
they've also always like played a short rotation of guys.
Yeah. And like Boeheim's teams, like they're gonna be healthy. They're gonna be short rotation. They're gonna have fresh legs. So, no, I don't see it being a problem later in the season.
Yeah, I'll just say this for Indiana before getting into the cute little notes of this game: 25 turnovers. Not gonna win too many games doing that.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you're just not. I mean, I thought the decision to really press Syracuse in that final possession was really interesting. Like, yeah. I definitely saw what they were going for. They just left that lane wide open.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that kind of situation where you literally have absolutely almost nothing to gain, pretty much,
yeah,
and everything to lose, as they did, it's interesting, you know?
So, like, Bagley going for the steal against UC Riverside.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You have a lot to get, little of the game, but a lot to lose.
I mean, I saw what they were trying to do, and I can understand the decision behind it, but it was just really interesting. And, of course, it looks good when it works.
Mm-hmm.
It looks terrible when it goes against you. And some of the bigger notes from this game, there's a ton of them, but I'll just say a few. The third longest game in Carrier Dome history. Longest since 1984.
Wow.
The largest point total for Syracuse since the sixth overtime game against UConn in 2009. Yeah. Highest scoring contest in the Big Ten ACC Challenge history. By a long shot, too. I mean, the combined 222 is a lot more than the next highest now of 191. Like, a lot more points.
Mm-hmm.
And both teams smashed through the single game scoring mark, which was previously 100. So a thrilling game. I'll just say that. That was the perfect appetizer to the Duke-Ohio State contest. And perhaps real quickly, too, with the Minnesota Pitt game that got decided in the final seconds, you know, the challenges love to produce these type of games to where these two teams are likely bottom dwellers or near bottom dwellers of their prospective leagues. Yet they both had a lot to fight for, and it showed. Within this game. I mean, Luke Lowe, the guy who, his only bucket in the game was the game winner. How about that for him? That was truly phenomenal. John Hugley, 25-14, really kept Pittsburgh in it throughout the duration of this game. And
no one else on Pittsburgh scored more than 6 points.
Yeah, and the shooting numbers of some of those guys were horrific, too. Mm-hmm. So it's just those type of games and challenges like this are just absolutely phenomenal. Outside of the challenge, craziest ensued in non-conference play. It's a time to push the panic button on some of this week's upset victims. We'll discuss that next on the College Basketball Bonanza. And welcome back here to the College Basketball Bonanza here on Blaze Radio, live in the Boston Radio Studio in downtown Phoenix. As we move along in our program away from the Big Ten ACC Challenge into some of the upsets within the non-conference slate this week, which the big one of the week, Alabama 91, Gonzaga 82, and a rocket in a very rocking Climate Pledge Arena. That was, like, you could feel when Gonzaga was getting back into that game after Alabama just destroyed him in the first half. You could kind of feel that arena really get rocking. And,
yeah, bring the NBA back to Seattle.
Yeah, I really think the announcers did a really good job of just hyping that place up because it was a tremendous atmosphere. But back to the game itself. Jaden Shackelford was absolutely fantastic in this game. 28 points, 9 rebounds. Javon Quinterly was really good as well. J.D. Davidson had 20 points in this game. And it was one of those things to where I think the blueprint for beating Gonzaga, this particular team, is really starting to come alive. And it's kind of the physicality that you got to go in there against Gonzaga and not be afraid. If you're afraid against Gonzaga, they'll light you up easily. But if you take it to them, there's a good chance you're going to be able to compete really well against the Gonzaga team.
Mm-hmm. I think Alabama was kind of hungry because they were a game away last year from playing this Gonzaga team in March Madness, and they were bringing pretty much everyone back. So Alabama's loaded. I think they kind of go unnoticed in the SEC because of Kentucky, but I think they should be one of the favorites in the SEC. And they have a lot of good guard play with Shackelford and then JQ. So I'm excited to watch for the Crimson Tide the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I picked Alabama to win the SEC on our SEC conference preview. If you want to go back and listen to all those episodes, you can find us on the College Basketball Bonanza on your preferred podcast platforms.
Attaboy, Dominic.
I give a little a nod to Nick there. I mean, Alabama, you just go out and you just got to blitz this Gonzaga team. You just got to put up points because they're going to score. We know Gonzaga's got the elite offense. We know they're going to run up and down the floor. It's going to be tough to limit them. And if you put up shots, you're going to have a chance to get yourself rebounds. And if not, you can get yourself back on defense. The worst thing you can do is, like you said, Nick, be afraid. Because what happens when you're afraid is you're going to start making mistakes. You can deal with missed shots, but if you start turning the ball over, Gonzaga is just going to mow you down in the fast break. And they didn't really have any opportunities. They did get some more in the second half as Alabama started to slow things down because they were winning. But got to give a lot of credit to Nate Oates. He's put Alabama back on the map in terms of college basketball. Obviously, they're a football school, and they forever probably will be. But basketball is an elite program right now, and they're really starting to build off it.
Yeah, and by the way, a big shout-out to Gonzaga's 13 of 25 from the free throw line. That's a big no-no.
Nope.
No. Don't do that. Let's talk about a team that perhaps I had, and within the T is mentioned the panic button, the Memphis Tigers.
Woof. They stink.
82-79 loss to Georgia. 3 days later, 67-63 loss to Ole Miss. Now, I get both of these games are on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. There is a big problem ensuing in Memphis, Tennessee. And it could be one that gets Penny Hardaway fired at the end of this season.
I think he is getting the boot.
It's that in some of these games, Jalen Duren, Amani Bates are getting extremely limited. And those were two guys that were pretty much expected to be the standouts of this team as the super freshman.
I mean, Imani Bates is supposed to be the number one pick in 2 years because he's younger. So he's
what the heck is going on here?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's making other guys have to step up, you know? And it's like your DeAndre Williamses of the world, you know? Like your Earl Timberlakes of the world who played solidly against Ole Miss but mm-hmm. terribly against Georgia. But the blueprint for limiting the two super freshmen is so obvious at this point.
Yep.
Iowa State's proven it. Ole Miss has proven it. I'll have to look back at the Virginia Tech box score, but I think they sort of proved it as well.
Yeah.
This is starting to really remind me of the ASU team last year. All kinds of talent. Never got it together. Now, the ASU team had a lot of stuff going on, whether it was injuries or COVID. You know, pausing play. You know, a lot of obstacles that never really got to see the true effect of that team. Memphis has none of those excuses.
Nope.
And they have got to get it together. And I'm really happy that Penny Hardaway is actually saying it, too.
Yeah. Did either of you guys read the article on The Athletic written by Seth Davis?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was detailing how veterans on the team just, like, aren't willing to, like, give up minutes, aren't willing to, like, be good team players. And that reflects a lot on the coaching staff and the culture there at Memphis. It's just a bunch of personalities going out there. I mean, I think when you look at it, with James Wiseman, that whole situation, that team was good. It obviously derailed their team freshman year, or our freshman year for us, Nick. Last year, the team wasn't quite as good, really good defensively. They're still kind of that same team build. But Boogie Ellis, he was kind of their point guard. He's gone on to a different school, and he's really thriving at USC.
Yeah, he's going crazy.
They're undefeated there for a reason. So I think that kind of reflects poorly on Coach Penny Hardaway. It's not just them losing these three games because they looked really good through their first five games. They have time to turn it around. They have a game against Murray State, who's not a walkover opponent by any stretch of the imagination, but got to win that because then you get Alabama and Tennessee.
Yeah, that is – those are two games that if Memphis plays it the way they have been, watch out. We could be seeing shades of the Iowa State game, quite frankly. And that's something that Memphis fans really want to avoid. And one of the things I said back when we had talked about the American Conference before the start of the year is that the expectations for Memphis should be to win the American Conference. If they're playing like this, Houston will run away with that conference.
No doubt.
And Penny Hardaway will get fired.
He will get
because
fired.
Because that was the expectation, for at least from the Memphis fan base. Yes, Houston is good, but with the talent you have, you better win the conference.
Yeah.
Whether they're playing? Not going to do that. Period. End of story.
I would like to add one thing, because I think we're going to see this a lot more, like, in the coming years. Because Imani Bates and Jalen Duren, like, they had a lot of spotlight them in high school. And I think now with the coverage of high school basketball being, like, a bigger thing, like, how Sierra Canyon and St. Vincent St. Mary's is playing on ESPN2 on Saturday night. And, like, high school basketball is getting a bigger spotlight, and, like, players like Imani Bates and Jalen Durringer expect, like, not necessarily being babied, but, like, they're going to want, like, star treatment. And I think that's kind of a problem that's going on in Memphis right now, and Hardaway has to fix that.
And with the veterans not liking it, too, like, if you can't keep your locker room together, you got a big problem in college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the NBA where you can get away with individuals. You have to play as a team in college basketball. You just have to.
Yep.
To move away from Memphis and to BYU, this Utah Valley game was weird.
Utah Valley's 4-0 in overtime this year.
Yeah, that's another big point within this. But Utah Valley shot 31.3% from the field, 26.3% from three, and they still won the game. And the big reason why, 12 of 16 from the free throw line in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big reason why Utah Valley ended up winning this game. But it is just super, super weird to where both teams are about shooting the same. This is not a typical anatomy of the upset here. It's just a really, really weird thing within this game. Alex Barcells doing a double-double. It's just, for me, when I look at upset box scores, there's typically a few things that you can point out and say, oh, yep, there it is, right there. I don't have that within this game, mm-hmm. other than the free throws in overtime.
For sure.
I mean, they shot 25% from 3-point, so that's not good. Barcelo, he only shot 5 of 12 from 2 and 1 of 4 from 3. He's one of the best shooters in the nation, so I think you definitely expect for him to have better nights. And, I mean, with 10 minutes remaining, BYU was up by 7. They ended up blowing that. And they're a better team than Utah Valley, so there's really no excuse, even if you're on the road. And, I mean, listen, I mean, this is just the reality, like, BYU is going to bring out the worst in opposing fan bases. So when BYU goes on the road, you can expect a rowdy road crowd just for the reasons that they're BYU. So it was a lively atmosphere for Utah Valley. They're a good team. I mean, I think people are kind of sleeping on Utah Valley. They've looked good, and I think they can compete up at the top of the WAC.
By the way, one more point before we go to break. Utah Valley is 1-9 against ranked opponents. The only win was the only home game in that stretch. Coincidence? I don't know.
No.
In addition to this week's non-conference madness, we learned plenty from early conference play, but who did we learn the most about? You'll find out next on the Bonanza. And welcome back here to the College Basketball Bonanza right here on Blaze Radio and BlazeRadioOnline.com. Nicholas Hodel, Dominic Stern, Dom Contini. Time now for a Bonanza Rank segment. We rank literally anything and everything. We proved that last week by ranking time slots. We're going to go back to the normal ranking of teams here. And as we mentioned earlier on, the three teams that you learned the most in conference games this week. That is the big signifier, conference games. So not from the Big Ten ACC Challenge, not from any non-conference upsets, but the conference games that took place. And I'm going to start out with my number three first, and that's Florida State. And after their loss against Syracuse, things are getting a little interesting now over at Florida State. You know, like, I know it's just one game, but it's certainly interesting when you're shooting 4 of 30 from three-point land, which that's a big no-no. And there's just a lot of things going on here that, and maybe this is an overreaction. It's one game. It's early. Florida State can overcome this. But in an ACC that below Duke could be filled with chaos, it does bring up some very interesting points about that Florida State team. Contini, number three.
We mentioned it earlier in the show, but my number three team is definitely Iowa. Their performance against Purdue was, I think, a lot. I was pretty unexpected because I thought most people thought Purdue was going to kind of controlled that game, and which they did until the very last couple of minutes, and Iowa made that final push, which showed a lot of grit in that game, and I think you really can never count out Coach McCaffrey and the Hawkeyes.
Dominic?
Yeah, my number three is that the Pac-12 is going to be very unpredictable outside of UCLA, USC, in Arizona. I think we've seen some disappointment from Oregon. They just lost at home to Arizona State, a team that was coming off 5 losses. Most of them were pretty ugly, with the exception of the loss at San Diego State. You've seen some other couple of teams fall. It's just been pretty ugly early in the Pac-12, and I think that's going to continue. But USC, UCLA, and Arizona are the top teams, clearly.
So you have the entire Pac-12.
Yeah, this is restrictive of the entire Pac-12.
My number two is going to be a little more specific, and that's on Washington State. And this one, I got to tell you something. The Washington State-Arizona State game was by far the worst basketball game I've ever attended in person. Mm-hmm. It was ugly. Like, we're talking like brick, turnover, offensive foul, yeah. Brick, steal, offensive foul, brick. No timeouts were called. What the heck was going on there? Like, I don't think I've ever seen a game where, on TV or in person, where from one media timeout to another media timeout, there was no point scored.
Yeah, it was ugly.
What the heck was going on there?
I promise you that's happened, and you just didn't realize that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure of it.
Right, but you were covering the game, so you had to.
The way they recovered in the second half, it at least somewhat got it going. And then the way they played on Pullman against USC. This Washington State team is going to live up to the hype that a lot of the pundits have, and not the preseason poll.
Yeah.
They're going to live up to it. They're going to be a factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to play some really good games against teams like a USC here. They're probably going to play well against Arizona, maybe even UCLA. They're going to be an interesting team to follow throughout the rest of the year, because I think they proved that they are living up to what the pundits were really talking about.
They match up really well with UCLA because they're very big.
Oh, they're very
big. A big team.
Yeah. Your number two, Mr. Contini.
My number two team is also Washington State. Yes, I was at that game as well, and it was ugly. But Washington State is very interesting. Like, the way they played against USC, I did not expect at all. I thought USC was going to run away with it. But like Dom said, they're just so like long and big. It's just they have the kind of a team size that will win them games, because so they're going to control the glass. And that's one of the reasons why Arizona State had no business winning that game. And my only question for Washington State is they don't really have that one guy to go to. So that's my number two team.
Dominic?
I'm going to go with Iowa. Other Dom just mentioned them. But going on the road against Purdue, it was looking very bleak for a pretty long time. They made it a very close game in the end. I believe they were down like 18 points. Made it close. And I was just super impressed, because obviously that game meant a lot to Purdue. They had a chance to basically become the number one team, which will be confirmed Monday morning. But on the road, hostile environment that always is Mackey Arena, especially considering the circumstances I just mentioned. And they fought back, and they're missing Keegan Murray, who's supposed to be one of their best players. So I think this team is going to be the real deal. And I think they're going to compete at the top of the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I'll make it a trifecta, and my number one is Iowa. I mean, Purdue had a 19-point lead at one point. And you guys are both exactly right. Without their leading scorer, Keegan Murray, in this game, things looked bleak. I mean, Purdue had a few moments of Jaden Ivey where it was the statement of a program ready to crash through its glass ceiling. And here came Iowa. You know, they really got things together. And if without the leading scorer, this could have been really interesting in Mackey Arena. But, you know, I give a big shout-out to Iowa for what they did. I think they proved they're going to be a factor in a lot of these games against really good opposition. And I give a big shout-out to Purdue as well. I was talking that night after the game with one of my best buddies from high school, who happens to be one of the head managers over at Butler. And he's been a Purdue fan all his life. And we kind of talked about that for a little bit. And he said it's a dream come true that Purdue's going to be number one on Monday. And, you know, it's a big,
yeah.
I know a lot of my high school classmates who are at Purdue. I mean, it's going to be a really bad day to be an adult beverage in West Lafayette on Monday when that AP poll does confirm the obvious.
They have,
yeah, I mean, that's going to be a really fun West Lafayette atmosphere. Number one for you, Mr. Contini.
My number one team is the Arizona State Sun Devils.
Ooh, I'm going to love to hear this.
I don't know what the game from this team, because we learned a ton from this team on Tuesday night against Washington State. And then they do this against Oregon, a team that was supposed to be one of the best teams in the Pac-12, and now we see that they're not. But just to win in overtime on the road in Eugene, I think is a major, like, congrats to the team. And, like, something that shows that Hurley was definitely in everyone's ear all week after that Washington State game, because that was ugly. And then now getting this win, I think, is going to give them a big boost into a week where they have GCU coming into town, which I'm going to talk about here in a couple minutes on my fresh take. But I'm just really happy. DJ Horn, I'm going to add him really quick. But DJ Horn, he scored 23 points against Oregon today. And he's really been the only consistent player, I would say, for the Sun Devils all year.
Number one, really quickly, Dominic.
I'm going to go with Syracuse. And what we learned is that they are just so unpredictable and they can win in multiple ways. The offense is going to be the highlight of Syracuse this year, 17th in offensive efficiency. The defense is really bad, 156th in defensive efficiency. But, Nick, like you mentioned earlier with one of these conference games, they held Florida State to just 60 points. So they can turn it up defensively. We saw Syracuse instilling a 1-2-2 zone instead of the 2-3 zone that we're all used to. And the 2-3 zone just has not worked for them point blank at all this year. They're not long enough at the top, but if they can change it up and change the zones mid-game, I think Syracuse can become a much more effective team with this elite offense.
And after another crazy week of college hoops, our awards are at stake. Find out who takes home the honors next on Blaze Radio's College Basketball Bonanza. And welcome back to the program. This is the College Basketball Bonanza right here on Blaze Radio with myself, Nicholas Hodel, Dom Contini, Dominic Stern. Time now for Shining Diamonds, our weekly awards, and we're going to go through this a little bit quicker than normal, because we got some words from Contini a little bit as well. But my team of the week, Ohio State, the upset, and I'm not up to date with what they're doing against Penn State, but the last time I checked, they were dominating them.
Yeah, they still are.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just a really good week. They played for about the last couple weeks. They deserve to be ranked.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be ranked.
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm going to say my team of the week now, too, which is the Ohio State University. And their record is, like, it doesn't tell the whole story. Their losses to Xavier and then Florida, two very good teams. And they showed so much in that Duke game that I'm just very happy to be an Ohio State Buckeye.
Yeah, I ran into you on campus, and you were wearing your Cincinnati hat and your Ohio State Buckeyes jersey the next day, so I could tell you're happy. My team is going to be Alabama. Not only did they basically go on the road to a neutral site and win handedly over Gonzaga, they dominated. Also, last week on Sunday, I didn't get the chance to talk about this. After they lost to Iona on Feast Week, they turned around on the weekend, and they absolutely decimated Miami, 96-64. So I think that even though they did lose to Iona, they're really showing what true team Alabama is.
Our individual of the week, for me, is Tennessee's Kennedy Chandler. A really good performance against Presbyterian on Tuesday, 15 points, 7 assists, 7 steals, 27 points against Colorado. And this is a guy that is going to lead Tennessee to wherever it wants to go. You know, Kennedy Chandler, as long as he's playing well, chances are Tennessee is going to be competing right up there with the best of the SEC.
Yeah. My player of the week is Johnny Davis, or a.k.a. Johnny Vegas, real name Jonathan Davis, point guard for the Wisconsin Badgers. He has really come onto the scene for Greg Gard and the Badgers, and he scored 25 points against Marquette on Saturday and 15 against Georgia Tech, like I mentioned earlier in this show. I'm just excited for this Badgers team.
My player of the week, it's the man, the myth, the legend, the best player in college basketball this year. It's Kofi Coburn. Turned it up in the Big Ten ACC Challenge against Notre Dame. Put up 28 points, 11 of 16 from shooting. Also 6 of 9 from the free throw line to go along with 8 rebounds in that contest. Very good game there. Was a big reason why they were able to beat Notre Dame 82-72. And then also against Rutgers, an 86-51 blowout win for the Illini. Didn't do a whole ton offensively, only 13 points. He only took 18 shots, though. Went 5 of 6 from the free throw line, but got 15 rebounds in this game. He got pulled out early, though, because they were playing so well. He was dominating on defense, too. Coburn, he's really starting to get his feet underneath him after sitting out the first three games. Illinois, after losing those two straight games to Marquette and Cincinnati, which we found out are two really good teams, They've won four straight and all in pretty dominant fashion.
And then our mid-major of the week, we talked a lot about what Utah Valley did. You know, it's one of those wins that puts your program on the map.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they haven't had that since coming to Division I. They haven't. Yep. And they have their moment of glory.
For sure. My team is the only good Wolverine team in the country, Utah Valley.
Nice. Good one. I wish that were the case on Saturday against the Aztecs. But I'm going to take a different Mountain West team. I'm going to talk about the Colorado State Rams because they had a very dominant win over a good St. Mary's team, 74-58, also early in the week. You know, you could have looked ahead. You're playing against a bad Little Rock team, and you have St. Mary's on the horizon later in the week. You could have looked ahead. But instead, they took care of business. They decimated Little Rock, also known as Chris Beard University, for our Chris Beard stands out there. They won 86-55, so I think Colorado State gets my mid-major nod of the week. I think this team should be ranked, honestly.
And what they did against St. Mary's, too, was really good.
Yeah, they only have two games over the next 2 weeks, Mississippi State, Tulsa, before they face Alabama. They could very well be sitting 11-0 going into that game against Alabama. That would be a huge game for them.
That is going to be very, very fun. Time now for this week's Fresh Take, courtesy of our resident freshman, Mr. Dom Contini. We give him 90 seconds and pretty much uninterrupted, just whatever is on your mind, and we'll probably react to it for a few minutes afterwards, but 90 seconds, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Here you go, 90 seconds.
All right, I prepared for this take before the events that occurred in Eugene, Oregon, but I was at the game on December 2nd, 2021, a day that will stand out in Arizona State sports history. It was ugly. And I was just going to add, first of all, I don't understand why a game is being played at 5:30 during the week in Tempe, Arizona. Because let me tell you, the school spirit, not even just by the students, by alumni, it's embarrassing. I can't stand it because it's the same way in football as it is in basketball. We can't fill up a stadium this save our lives. It's a Pac-12 basketball game against Washington State. They were favored on the road, and it's not like Washington State has a star player that is gonna give them those numbers in Vegas. But I'm just shocked. But now, I think this Oregon win is going to help the Sun Devils. But I'm very interested to see what this stadium looks like against GCU this week because I think it really could be a Grand Canyon home crowd.
Yeah, I mean, and thank you very much for that first off. And, you know, that's one of the things that I have been looking forward to for the longest of times now has been that game. I've had that game circled in my calendar for months.
Yep.
And it's coming up on Thursday. We're going to predict it here in a few minutes. You know, how GCU travels, and here's the interesting thing about GCU, they go to school longer than ASU.
Mm-hmm.
I looked it up a little bit ago. Their face-to-face instruction does not end until December 17th. So their students are here.
Yep.
And if they're smart enough, they're going to travel.
Yeah, and it's not like their school is known for their student section. Like it's packed every game.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
The big question is GCU gonna do it? You know? And this really is the battle for the Valley. And I'll let Dominic in on this here. Like, this could be for the title of best basketball program in the Valley on Thursday.
Yeah, and I don't wanna like come in defense of ASU students because I personally haven't gone to an ASU game yet this year. I know I will because the games are fun. But it was finals week, we're leading up into finals week. It was a Tuesday game at 5:30. Like, it's just not like the most appealing. It's also Washington State. I know the crowds will get better as the year goes on, but an embarrassing game, not only because of the play on the court, but also the turnout in the stands. It's rough. Mm-hmm. And there was also a very big Suns game that night. Because it was Tuesday, right?
No, it was tonight.
It was Wednesday.
Yeah. Never mind. That point stands mute.
There goes that excuse.
Yeah. So, I mean, ASU sports have never been, like, a huge draw anyways. But, yeah, I mean, it's been a rough showing for ASU athletics. Yeah.
With my dad being an alum, I'll just say this to close out the segment. I remember the days where they used to really tarp off the final few rows in the upper bowl and had that some like Sun Devil Club decoration. I remember those days.
Uh-huh.
Are those gonna come back?
I don't think so.
I mean, because it's gonna take a few years of this to really get to that level, but it's very intriguing.
This
you know?
Was my fresh take, and I am a freshman, and I'm coming from an athletic department like Ohio State, so I think that has something to do with it. Yeah. But I'm just very embarrassed for it to be.
Yeah, and you know, you go to other places, it opens your eyes.
Yeah,
you know, uh-huh. I'm telling you, going to new places really opens your eyes. I can
going
tell
you. Going to the game against Viejas with Zach to call the game for Blaze, he's like, wow, he's like, this never happens at ASU. It's sad.
Yeah. Well, Big Ten play and plenty of non-conference goodies are on the schedule for this next week. We'll predict some of the high-profile games on the schedule coming up next on the Bonanza here on Blaze. And here we go with our final segment here on the Bonanza. Nicholas Odell, Dom Contini, Dominic Stern. It's our prediction segment, and I've fallen a little bit behind over the course of the past week or so, but not too far behind. Just a game. I'm at 24-16 so far. Contini picked up a game at 25-15. Mr. Dominic Sherwin is 3 games ahead of me at 27-13. But, of course, long season to go. A lot of things can change. And 10 fresh games to predict, 5 from the midweek, 5 from the weekend. And we all have pretty much locked in our picks before the show. And I am pretty much the responsible person for reading those off. So, Illinois and Iowa on Monday, perhaps the only decent game to watch. Unless you are really, really into mid-majors,
yeah.
Then by means, go for it. But myself and Mr. Contini have Illinois. Dominic has Iowa.
I do have Iowa in this game. We mentioned how impressed that we have been with them. They're playing at home here, and Illinois, they have been getting a little bit better, but I do think Iowa's offense is able to take control of Illinois.
Yeah, and perhaps the turnover battle could come into play there. And we all have Tennessee against Texas Tech. I mentioned Kennedy Chandler earlier. I think he will be the key difference for them in that game.
It'll be Mr. Chandler's first, but certainly not last game at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, absolutely. Indiana and Wisconsin. You guys both have Wisconsin. I have Indiana. I mean, this could be coming from a place of, you know, rah-rah Indiana here, uh-huh. But I just really love this Indiana team. I mean, I honestly thought they should have won that game in the Carrier Dome. And, you know, if it wasn't for the 25 turnovers, they probably would have.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Oh, they should have won the game, but they had 25 turnovers.
I definitely do think this Indiana-Wisconsin game is one of the better Big Ten early season games.
Yeah, The Big Ten is loaded with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely is. Texas and Seton Hall. Another interesting game in the midweek. Myself and Dominic Stern have Texas. You have Seton Hall done.
I think Seton Hall can get it done. I, of course, watched them against Ohio State, which was one of the best games of the season so far, I would say. And Texas hasn't impressed me. And Seton Hall is home. So I'm looking forward to this game because I think it will definitely be a great game.
Yeah, Texas hasn't played a team inside the top 175 in terms of KenPom except for Gonzaga.
And you know what? They've had some time between that Gonzaga game. And against Gonzaga, it was not a war of talent. It was a culture war. They now have to have the time to build the culture and build the team identity they want. And I hope that shows against Seton Hall. GCU and AC and ASU, you know, coming into today, I told myself, I have not seen anything from ASU that leads me to believe they're going to beat GCU.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Oregon game happened.
Yeah.
And they've suckered me in to picking team. ASU along with you guys.
It's all right. You can't lose the game here.
Yeah, they have suckered me into it, and I hope to God I don't pay for that in some form of fashion within the L column. In the weekend, man, there's a lot of good games here. Houston and Alabama, myself and Mr. Contini have Alabama. Dominic, going with Houston.
Yeah, I've been super impressed with how Houston has looked early on this year. They absolutely decimated Bryant. I mean, it was just a clinic. So they've been super impressive since the two-point loss to Wisconsin, in which they trailed by 20 at half. So, I mean, they really won the second half, which, of course, doesn't matter. But they showed they're capable of falling behind and coming back. I've just been super impressed. They have the best defense in the country, and I'm going to trust that on the road.
Arizona, Illinois. Myself and Dominic Stern like Arizona. Mr. Contini, you like Illinois.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the game where Illinois actually shows who they were supposed to be in Brad Underwood. And the Illini get it done against Arizona, a team that has really come out of nowhere. So I think it's like two different stories between these Arizona and Illinois team, because Arizona wasn't supposed to be good, but now they are, and Illinois was supposed to be good, and here we are. So I think Illinois can get it done against the Wildcats.
Yeah, I don't think we really talked about this with the Bama-Gonzaga game, but the effect that Tommy Lloyd has had on both Arizona, who has been phenomenal, and Gonzaga, you know, I really think that Tommy Lloyd, his effect in this Arizona team has been much more than we ever could have thought.
For sure.
Because this Arizona team has proven to be one of the more pleasant surprises of this season. Now, mm-hmm. of course, from an ASU student standpoint, that's not the case. But as the college basketball analyst that we are, Arizona looks good.
Yeah.
They really do. Colorado State and Mississippi State, we all have Colorado State, which I think was very interesting there. Arkansas, Oklahoma, we have all gone for Arkansas. And then Villanova and Baylor. Man, what a good game this will be on Sunday. Myself and Dominic have gone with Baylor. You have Villanova, Don containing.
I think Colin Gillespie and Jay Wright get it done against the defending champs. I mean, on the UCLA Villanova broadcast, they mentioned how Jay Wright had asked Gillespie what kind of schedule he wanted coming into the season, and Gillespie said he didn't want a cupcake schedule, and that has definitely showed what the slate Villanova has had. So I think this is the game Villanova actually gets a victory. So I'm excited to see Jay Wright and Villanova get it done.
Yeah, Villanova's basically played the teams from Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, which is, of course, LaSalle, Penn, and St. Joe's.
Yep.
And then they've played an insanely tough schedule. UCLA, Tennessee, Purdue, and then now, of course, they play Syracuse earlier in the week, too, which isn't on our pick'em list. And then Baylor. They also have Creighton. And then Xavier to start off BU's play.
Yeah, and the one point I'll make before we go is that, you know, in the big games that Villanova's had, Villanova's played well.
Exactly.
They haven't finished.
I think this is the game they do it. So.
Man, yeah, I mean, just looking at the trend lines, I don't know, but that will be very fascinating to see if that indeed happens. But that's going to be all for us here on the College of Basketball Bonanza. As a reminder, if you want to listen to any of our previous episodes, please feel free to do so on your preferred podcast platform. And also, do not forget to follow us at College Bonanza, as this may be the last show for the semester here on Blaze Radio, but we got a lot more coming your way over the course of the last 4 or 5 weeks. It's going to be a very fun time, so please follow us there on Twitter. Who knows? Our shows might just be live streaming on there over the course of the next 4 or 5 weeks, so give us a follow there at College Bonanza. Again, that is at College Bonanza for all kinds of exclusive content over the course of the next 4 or 5 weeks. Of course, you'll always have your episodes here on your preferred podcast platform. But again, Twitter's the place to be. For Dom Contini and Dominic Stern, I'm Nicholas Hodel, wishing you a very good week. And for the Blaze listeners, giving you the joy, the majesty, the pageantry of One Shining Moment.